Good morning, everybody, and welcome. Thanks for coming. My name is Lena Camperlengo, and I work at the CDC as a health scientist, and I work with the Sudden Unexpected Infant Death Case Registry. We've just finished a three-year pilot project, and we're excited to be here today to tell you about how we developed and grew, and we also have with us our partner from the National Center for the Review and Prevention of Child Death, that's Terry Covington, and two state grantees representing their own personal experiences with the Sudden Unexpected Infant Death Case Registry, Lisa Hartman from New Jersey and Shannon from Shannon Stotenberg Wing from Michigan. Sorry, blank there for a second. All right. So as we get going, I'll begin the presentation with an overview and a bit of the history of the SUID case registry over time and some of the progress to date. Then Terry will take over and give you a broader look at child death review, and you can really get an appreciation of why we work together and how we integrate our services. After that, we'll have Shannon come up and tell you a bit about Michigan's view and their experience with the SUID case registry. And finally, Lisa will present on New Jersey if she can tear herself away from her iPhone looking at what's going on at home. So, for New Jersey. All right, so I'm going to start this off. And as I do, I'm going to start with some definitions because we definitely all use different terms and use them differently. So if we just start the whole presentation off with some basic definitions here and tell you about some trends in sudden unexpected infant death over time, and then I'll get to the case registry, why we started it, how we started it, and a bit of the history of our pilot project is done and some of the progress to date. All right, starting us off with some definitions. When we say sudden unexpected infant death at CDC, we're really talking about those infants who die suddenly and unexpectedly without an immediately obvious cause of death prior to investigation. So when you think about deaths like motor vehicle accidents, nobody expects a motor vehicle accident. However, the cause of death is immediately obvious. It is the motor vehicle accident. So the SUID are, we're not quite sure what happened until we go in and do a full investigation. Using that definition, SIDS then becomes a type of SUID. And I think Terry's going to go try and take care of our bleed through from our neighbors next door here. So using that definition of SUID, there are many different types of infant death that fall under this umbrella. Let me just give you an example. Baby is in the crib, mom and dad find this baby, it's non-responsive, this baby has died, and what they find on toxicology is that this baby died of a cough medicine overdose. That's a sudden unexpected infant death without an immediately obvious cause of death that was found out after investigation. So you see poisoning is in here, cardiac channelopathies, infections, etc., something that you're not quite sure what happened, but after investigation you might figure it out. Now, after investigation, you might not figure it out. So a sudden unexpected infant death may be explained. It was long QT or it was that cough medicine overdose. But it might remain unexplained, in which case we're talking about SIDS, and we're talking about a category called undetermined cause. And if you notice, I've got suffocation straddling both camps. That's because there's no marker at autopsy for suffocation. You cannot say that this baby died of suffocation based on a test. If we had the suffocation test at autopsy, boy, that would make things a lot easier. But there is no such thing. So suffocation, when a death certifier uses that term for the cause of death, they're usually really relying on information gathered at the death scene because oftentimes at autopsy, there really is no marker there. So moving on with definitions, the definition we use for SIDS is really sort of what we call the standard definition. 1999, there was a work group that came together, and SIDS then becomes an infant death that happens, and you can't figure out what's going on after three components: a thorough death scene investigation, a complete autopsy, and a review of the medical records. So these three things have to be in place. Think about your own communities. How good is the death scene investigation for infant deaths? So is that component there? And of course, autopsy is usually there unless it's not consented to by the parents. But usually the missing component here is the death scene, a good death scene investigation. So if you don't have a good death scene investigation, what do you call it? Maybe you call it unknown cause or undetermined. So I've got the same definition up here, but one of those three conditions, or maybe all three, have not been met. And an unknown cause, death certifiers also use this term. It's sort of an ill-defined term as causes of death go, and sometimes they call it undetermined, unspecified. So it's like we really don't know what happened. And the only way I can tell you that the difference between unknown cause and SIDS is that by definition one of those components is missing. One of those three components is missing. And let's move on to the next category of unexpected infant death. And this is accidental suffocation, strangulation in bed. And I will shorthand this as ASSB for the rest of the presentation. So ASSB has a couple, actually four different mechanisms that we can really count. And when you use this code or you write this in a death certificate for an infant, we really don't know how this baby died, by what mechanism. Was the baby found face down on a pillow or under an adult or wedged between the mattress and the wall or wedged between some defective railings in a crib? All of those are the same code for the death. We really don't know how or why this baby died. The public health implications for SUID, we're counting about 4,200 cases per year in the United States, about half are SIDS. Let me put that in perspective for you, as we just came from an international SIDS conference in Baltimore, and the Netherlands did a great presentation where they talked about their 10 cases a year. 10 cases a year. We don't even have one state in the United States that has as few as 10 cases per year. So it's still a problem here in the United States. Because half of them are SIDS, SIDS turns out to be the leading cause of post-neonatal mortality. And that's SIDS by itself, let me remind you. Oftentimes we like to combine all three of these terms together, SIDS, undetermined cause, and ASSB, but SIDS alone is the leading cause of post-neonatal mortality. And suffocation, or ASSB, is the leading cause of infant injury mortality. By definition, injury is preventable. So to me, this is what excites me about my work at CDC, is that we have a chance to reduce infant mortality by getting these babies out of dangerous sleep environments and having them not suffocate. The CDC came out with a vital stats report recently on injury in the United States. Good news, it's going down in the United States. Injury-related deaths are going down, except in two categories. One of those teenagers who like to overdose on painkillers. But teenagers is a large group of years. The other category are infant suffocation. In 1 year period, we got a 30% increase in infant suffocations. So while we were celebrating good news, the injuries are going down, infant suffocation is going up. I told you just a second ago that we kind of lumped together these three codes for a sudden unexpected infant death, and this is one of the reasons why. It's because there's really no consistency in how death certifiers call a death. I do an exercise during training where I give a scenario for infant death. Baby was found in bed between two parents. They breastfed. They were non-smokers. They had a fan on. They gave the kid a pacifier, loaded with protective mechanisms here. What do you call it? And I have them go stand in the corner. SIDS, ASSB, SUID, cause unknown. Every audience I've done that for, there's people standing in every one of those corners. So given the same information, people are calling this different things. Makes it really hard to track, really hard to agree on what we should call what. And as I mentioned, there's no biological marker for suffocation. So given that difficulty, let's look at trends over time. All right, I know this is a busy chart, so I'll orient you to it. First, I want you to get your, well, along the x-axis here are the years, and the y-axis is a death rate per 100,000 live births. And let's look at the red line first. The red line represents SIDS over time. And you can see in the early 1990s, we were pretty high. And then in 1992, AAP says, you know what, we should put our kids on their back, and maybe their size. 1994, we came out with the Back to Sleep campaign, and you see the slope of that line is pretty nice and steep, and then it starts to level out. Now let me draw your attention to the yellow line. That's the cause unknown, unknown cause. Maybe something was missing, a death scene investigation or something like that. And that's sort of been slowly increasing but kind of holding steady. And then finally, the green line, that's suffocation. And that has more than quadrupled since the early 1990s. It's still small numbers, but it's a significant increase over time. When we take all three of those together and we just look at SUID over time, that's the top blue line. And you can see because SIDS really drove this model, it really mimics the SIDS curve for a while, up until about 1996 or so where it flatlines. And there's been publications, some from CDC colleagues, that suggest that there might be a diagnostic shift going on, that back in the early 1990s they might have been quick to call it a SIDS case, and now maybe with better death investigation they're calling it suffocation. We know that infant sleep position is a major driver for SIDS and perhaps for suffocation. And we can look at the National Infant Sleep Position Study over time. In the early 1990s, back when the SIDS rate were very high, only 13% of families were putting their babies on their backs. And over time, they've done a really good job as that SIDS curve steadily declined and then plateaued, just like the SIDS curve. So we're kind of holding steady at about 70-75% of parents are putting their babies on their back. We're really not reaching that last 25%. Another way to look at it, talking about this diagnostic shift, if we take a slice of the pie in 1996, we see the majority of these cases, 84%, were called SIDS of SUID. 10 years later, in 2006, the SIDS has really decreased. Suffocation has gone up tremendously, as well as unknown cause. So there has been this shift in diagnosis. Maybe it's not a shift in the type of death, but in how people are reporting them. So I talked a little bit about why this is happening since 1999, that's steady. The way the death certifiers are certifying these deaths, we really don't have a good handle on why or how they're doing this, what makes this a SIDS case versus a suffocation case. It really seems to vary, not just by jurisdictions, but within jurisdictions based on the death certifier. And we think perhaps this might have something to do with the fact that death investigations have hopefully gotten better. In 1996, the CDC published a reporting form to be used at the death scene of an infant so that we're collecting standardized data at the death scene of an infant, and an increased influence of child death review, which you'll hear in just a little bit. All right, with that background, let me introduce you to the SUID case registry. So we've got these infants dying of SIDS, unknown cause, and suffocation out there, and we're trying to keep an eye on the trends over time, and we're trying to develop prevention strategies. Really difficult because we're all over the map. We really don't know what's going on. One of my colleagues actually looked at every text field in an infant death certificate for 2003-2004. Actually, I did that too. And we're just not getting the information there. We aren't getting the contextual information of what environment this baby died in. So we realized we needed a different source. We needed a data source that really told us about the baby's sleep environment, any kind of past medical history, and what was done at the death scene. And we aren't getting that from the death certificate. So over time, we developed a feasibility study, and we partnered with CDC's National Violent Death Reporting System. Turned out they were looking at a lot of the same data sources we needed. Law enforcement records, the death certificate. They were looking at a lot of the same records. So we built it on the National Violent Death Reporting System. 7 states participated, and when they got done, they kind of said, look, we're really good at linking databases. We're not so good at sitting around a table and talking about what happened and why an infant died. So maybe you should not think about us as your platform. Maybe you should look at child death review instead. And that was really sort of the bottom line summary recommendation from the feasibility study. In 2008, we entered a planning year where we convened experts twice at the CDC for two-day meetings, and they all agreed that we should build on child death review as our model. And instead of reinventing the wheel and wasting resources coming up with a whole new system, we partnered with child death review. Our pilot program began in 2009. We started with 5 states. We were able to add 2 more states a year later, and active surveillance began January 1st in 2010. So the model that we chose really builds on current activities, which was great because there's a policy and procedures book in place. There's been programs in place. They're used to doing this already. We added some new variables to this. They were using web-based data system, and we use that as our database. So while these programs were already out there, the CDC was able to fill the gap in. In other words, you'll hear from our states, they were doing surveillance of SUID, but not population-based surveillance. So with the CDC money, we asked them to up the ante, do population-based surveillance of SUID within their state, and we also provided, obviously, technical assistance to really help them build their capacity to identify, review, enter, and clean their data, and then ultimately to drive prevention strategies. Our goals as we set forward the SUID case registry were to create this population-based SUID surveillance at the state level, and then to use the information. There's about, 1,200 variables in a case report for an infant death, and we're using the common factors to categorize these deaths into categories that may or may not be the same as the official cause of death. And in doing so, by lumping them together based on common factors, were they in an unsafe sleep environment or not? Was there enough evidence for suffocation or not? We can monitor those trends in those end categories and describe within those categories environmental and demographic factors. We're doing all of this to be able to inform prevention strategies and hopefully save babies' lives. Within the SUID case registry, we have two types of variables. And to me, I think this makes it different than some surveillance systems. Yes, we collect that individual-based variable. What was the sleep environment like? Was the baby sick? How was mom's health during pregnancy? But we also collect information about the investigation. So it's not just what we know, it's how we know it. And the investigation variables include components of the death scene. Was there a doll reenactment done? Was witness interviews done? And what was done at autopsy? There's no standardization for infant autopsy in the United States. What exams were done? We have no idea across the board. What tests and procedures were done? We collect all of that on each infant. And sort of for all you visual learners here, the SUID case registry data sources start at the scene, at the house. It includes any EMS reports, hospital reports, medical records, the death certificate, and all of this information and the people who represent these data sources come together in a multidisciplinary team and they discuss the case. So the SUID case registry then becomes really a process. It hinges on this multidisciplinary team review and discussion. So there's a quantitative part, there's a qualitative part. We ask them to write in what modifiable factors could have been changed to prevent this infant's death. What kind of prevention strategies would you recommend to prevent similar infant deaths? So we're collecting both qualitative and quantitative data here. And it really is a feedback loop. At the end of the review, the last questions that we have in the case report is, basically, if you had $1 million, medical examiner, what would you have done differently? And if you had $1 million to investigate this death, what would you have done differently? We recognize that our law enforcement and medical examiner partners are really constrained by limited resources. They want to do genetic testing at autopsy, but at $5,000-$6,000 a pop, they're not doing it on every kid. What the SUID case registry is not is a data linking project. So you can't do this in isolation. You can't do this without building relationships with your multidisciplinary team, with your public health, your injury prevention, your maternal child health, law enforcement, CPS, they all need to be at the table. And let me tell you about our progress to date. In 2010, we started data collection with 5 states. We had New Jersey, Michigan, Georgia, Colorado, and New Mexico. A year later, we were able to add Minnesota and New Hampshire. And this year, we just entered our second funding cycle, and we have 9 states with us, including of the original 7, 6 of the original 7 came with us for the journey. We added Louisiana, Arizona, and Wisconsin to this. They were just funded a few weeks ago. Next week, they meet at CDC for their kickoff training. The SUID variables that we added to that case report for child death review that we layered on there, we understand that some states volunteered to start collecting that unfunded. So not only do we have all of our funded states here, we actually have some unfunded states using those variables. They're probably not doing population-based like we're paying our states to do. As a matter of fact, I plead with them, please don't do a good a job as our funded states, because then they're just going to tell me, why are we funding the states? So a few of them have assured me, don't worry, we won't. But they've turned on those SUID-specific variables in their own child death review system. So if you see your state up here, they are collecting SUID-specific variables at their reviews. We just got a data set in, but it just came in a little too late to make it into a SAS flat file, so I've got data as of June 30th. As of June 30th, our states have identified more than 1,300 cases, and they've basically cleaned about 900. Now I know with that last data set, it's over 1,000. It's over 1,000 clean cases that we are processing, analyzing, looking at, and we'll put out a report on for the pilot project. Of course, pilot project, the first 3 years was a lot of work in getting the data clean. And improving data quality was really the aim of the first 3 years. So we worked a lot with states. We tried to implement some innovative strategies like peer-to-peer site visits, where we sent the states to, actually these guys, you visited each other. No, Shannon, you went to New Jersey. New Jersey went to Colorado. And we really wanted them to, we wanted to blow their mind, so we sent them to a state that was really dissimilar from themselves. So they, some of them came away saying, why'd you send me there? They're nothing like us. Yeah, exactly. And they were supposed to come back with two ideas that they could use from visiting that state to improve their own systems. So we sent them to go visit each other. And we listened to our grantees as well. It wasn't CDC top down. Our grantees said, these questions our review teams don't understand. This is too technical. Nobody's getting what you're trying to get at for this question. We've modified, we've eliminated questions, and we've changed questions as we went along. Some of the program improvements over time, they've really improved timeliness from the death of an infant to when they're identified, when it was identified to review, to entering, to cleaning. That time period has really shortened over the time of the pilot project. They've improved death scene investigation reporting. Basically, if the death scene wasn't done, your case report's incomplete. So one of the first strategies you'll hear from both of the states is that we got to go out and train death investigators. And New Jersey just finished doing that with over 100 of them. So it needs to be collected at the scene. And they found creative ways to get information for the case report, summary sheets from medical examiner's offices so that the case review team that's sitting there reviewing the case doesn't have to sift through a pathology report. It's sort of shorthand for them and done in layman's terms. And we've and some of them have instituted some of the quality assurance measures where a staff person is sure to go to the review meetings to clarify any language or and also to stimulate that end discussion on prevention. Oh, that's my slide that was messed up, and I wanted to share with you a couple of these data-to-action success stories. Because of their participation in the SUID case registry and looking at their own data, Georgia and Colorado both implemented safe sleep coalitions, where they brought together injury prevention and maternal child health in their state health departments and included a lot of local partners. And when the American Academy of Pediatrics came out last year to put out new recommendations for the prevention of SIDS and other sleep-related deaths, they really use that as a platform. And what they've been doing in their own communities is really shifting this discussion from just a simple no bed sharing to something that's more broad and talking about the environment based on the data that they have for their own state. So talking about a safe sleep, the soft bedding in their environment and getting that out of the environment, because what we're seeing in this data is not particularly bed sharing that is a big issue, because these babies are dying in adult beds whether or not there's another person in there with them. So we need to talk about safe sleep environments and just get them out of the adult bed completely. And another data to action success story recently in New Mexico, they've really partnered with their PRAMS. Anybody not know PRAMS is a survey of new mothers. They're a couple of months, like 3 to 6 months out having a new baby, and they asked them in New Mexico about where the baby sleeps. So our SUID grant project officer, Paula V, partnered with them to find out what are New Mexico's families doing? How are they practicing safe sleep? And of course, she sees the horrible cases, the babies who died, and Prams gets to see with the controls, and they're working together on a manuscript. But October being SIDS Awareness Month, they came out with a press release, they did a webinar, and they posted a Safe Sleep page on their Department of Health website. So they use their own data to drive some of the messages for New Mexico parents. The next steps we have, this might be a long list here, but let me just shorten it and say our next steps we plan to work on prevention. So our first 3 years with our grantees, we really worked on improving data quality. And that was our end product. That was our end goal. Now we're going to get them to take the good data quality and say, how do we go through some black box process and end up with prevention? So when they meet with us next week for our kickoff training, that's the process we're going to start, is really honing in on using your data to drive prevention strategies in your own state. And I'd like to acknowledge some of my colleagues at CDC, as well as our colleagues at the National Center for Review and Prevention of Child Death. And of course, none of this would be possible without any of the state grantees who work so hard at the local level. Thanks.